following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn, Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. My goodness, do we plan on sticking true to that slogan here this afternoon? A really, really fun show set up for you here this afternoon. We'll get to that here in just a little bit on this gloomy, chilly Wednesday afternoon. I know there's some weather apparently working its way into the state of Alabama as we continue on through the week and into the weekend. We'll talk about the show here, as I mentioned, in just a little bit. But I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio and solo with you in the studio. Nothing but empty chairs surrounding me here in the studio this afternoon. That's right. Play the boo hotkey, whatever you need to, as no Jacob Goins here with us on the show today. Feeling a little bit under the weather. Tried pushing through it over the past couple of days, but realized that today was one of those days that wasn't worth trying to fight through. And so giving him the day off. So it will just be me, it will just be you, and it will just be our wonderful guests here on the show this afternoon. We are going to have a whole lot of fun on the show here this afternoon. We're talking about the biggest disease in college football, or college sports, that is. That being winning, how it just about solves and cures everything. We'll dive into a really fun conversation on Auburn defeating Ole Miss last night, something that neither Jacob nor I really predicted because we hadn't seen it and we were not going to put that to the test. But my goodness, do we have some really good things to talk about on the show, or on that subject here today, picking up their first true road win, back-to-back wins in the SEC. We'll talk about where they sit in the standings because, well, if you look at it right now, things may not look that bad. And my goodness, you go back and you look at the Georgia loss, the Texas A&M loss, and what this season could be already, if not what it could show right now. And still a lot of work to do, a lot of ground to make up, and you hit the heart of your gauntlet of the SEC schedule. We'll talk about that here to start the show. We'll dive into some of the player stats and just the overall thoughts from that contest. And then we'll talk about the drama going on the other side of the state. Do you remember the name Charles Bediako? I'm sure you do. It's been a couple of years, and you probably had to go back and dig into your brain just a little bit. But a name that you haven't really heard of since about 2022, 2023, we will talk about the entire debacle and the situation that is going on in Tuscaloosa, and not even making this an Auburn versus Alabama thing, but just a college basketball, an NCAA travesty that is taking place as we speak. And will continue to take place over the next 10 days or so until some sort of drama gets figured out, I guess you could say. And I mean, my goodness, when you just talk about the NCAA folding and the NCAA on its way out, this could be the biggest test of the NCAA's entirety. And this could be what simply changes the landscape and the mindset towards the NCAA. We'll talk about all of that here to get the show started. Before we get joined by a very, very special guest, somebody that I've been working to try and get on the show for quite some time, being the voice of the Lee Scott Warriors. And we have a former Lee Scott Warrior, a former Georgia Bulldog and a PGA Tour winner. That's right, Davis Thompson is going to join us on the phone lines here at 2:30. No Jordan Hill, so no dogs 24/7, but a former Georgia Bulldog joining us on the phone lines to talk about his career just up to this point, what he wants to do this season, talk about some of the offseason work. A really, really cool conversation that I'm really excited for. So on the golf world of things, it should be a very, very fun conversation. We'll give a little bit of updates on Lee Scott Academy basketball as well, as they got some big wins last night, back in action tomorrow night. All of that here in hour number one. And then Double D of Locked On Auburn and the Barnes, Errol Daprich, is going to join me on the phone lines. I'm not sure if there's a Double D rant on the Auburn side of things here today, like you got last week after Auburn being 2-0 on the hardwood, but maybe a Double D rant just coming in the world of college basketball again. So we'll talk a little bit about that Bediako situation in hour number one, but I know that he has a lot of thoughts, and we'll dive into a lot more of that to start hour number two. We're going to talk about some of the best games in college basketball last night and tonight in the SEC and the top 25. Before we have another really fun conversation not with Butch Thompson, but about Butch Thompson and the boys on the diamond as they get their baseball season started here in just a couple of weeks. We'll have a guest join us in there as well. So all of that's coming up on the show here today. No phone lines again with no Jacob Goins in the studio here with us this afternoon. But the phone lines are open pretty much for the first 30 minutes of the show today, and then not really for the rest of the show. So if you have any thoughts on any sort of situation going on, whether that is Auburn, whether that is the Bediako situation or anything else that is on your mind here on this Wednesday afternoon, feel free, give me a call, 334-321-1390. Let this light up next to me. We'll get you connected to the phone lines. We'll get you on the line, let you get those thoughts out there here on this Wednesday afternoon. Again, 334-321-1390. But again, talking about the biggest disease in all of college sports, or maybe just sports in general, that being the disease of winning and how winning cures just about everything. Auburn defeats Ole Miss 78-66. They pick up their first true road win of the season. And we talked about the South Carolina game being a win that really saved the season for the Auburn Tigers, because 1-4 in SEC play was just not going to cut it from a player perspective, from a coach perspective, and from a fan base perspective as well. I mean, you don't want to say a complete buyout, but my goodness, there would not be a whole lot of locking in with this Auburn basketball team if that were to be the case. But they pick up a really nice win inside Neville Arena, one again that you won't look at as a program-shifting win in the 2025-2026 season, but it's a win that you will scroll past and not really have to think about, which is a very nice thing to think about, because Auburn right now was not in the spot where they could complain about wins in general. And they do so in Neville Arena, shooting their worst that they've probably shot all season long. But the compliments on the defensive side of the basketball, the defensive side of the floor, and how the offense didn't translate into poor defense. And my goodness, you saw that yet again in Oxford last night as the Tigers pick up back-to-back wins in the SEC. They moved to 3-3, 12-7 overall on the season, 78-66. First half, my goodness, there with both the play-by-play announcer and the color commentator were making jokes saying, "We apologize if this is your first game tuning in to watch SEC basketball talent. We promise there's a lot of talent on the offensive side of the floor on for both of these teams and just in the conference, but we aren't seeing it here in this first half." It was 28-27 at the halftime break, and Auburn was 1 of 10, I believe, from behind the arc. A lot of those were not necessarily great shots, but decent shots. Some of them just wouldn't go down, but the shot selection wasn't necessarily there for Auburn or how you like it to be in that first half. However, again, the defense stood up and stood tall, only allowing 27 points in those first 20 minutes. And then the second half really, really turned things around. Whatever the message was that Stephen Pearl and the entire staff gave to this Auburn team was critical. It was needed. It was almost desperate for this team. And you saw the physicality change in the second half. You saw a team get downhill. You didn't see a team settle for behind the three-point line where you were only 2 of 17. That now makes it 4 of 37 in your last 80 minutes of action from behind the rainbow. 4 of 37, yet you've only allowed 133 points. That speaks for itself on the defensive-minded Stephen Pearl and how maybe it's getting through to these players of how maybe when the defense or the offense isn't necessarily clicking, you can still get stops on the defensive side of the floor. That way, once you do get hot and you can knock down a couple big buckets or you can knock down a couple threes or what you saw in this game, you get to the free throw line and use your physicality to absolutely dominate in the second half. The score was 50-39 scoring-wise in that second half. It was not indicative to the dominance that Auburn put on the floor in Oxford in that second half. You saw stars step up for the Auburn Tigers, especially in that second half. Keyshawn Hall and Tahad Pettiford. They combined for 36 points in this contest, 22 of those in the second half. Two players for 22 of the 50 points that you scored in the second half. And again, on the road as Auburn picks up their first true road win of the season. And the most impressive thing to me is you scored 22 points in that second half, and you did so without making a three for those two guys. You did not knock down a three with Keyshawn Hall and Tahad Pettiford, but my goodness, you saw demanding of the basketball, which is so refreshing. You saw Tahad Pettiford in the final 4 minutes of the game basically tell his team, the ball is going to be in my hands, I'm going to walk it up the floor, and it might work through Keyshawn Hall in the low block or in the corner or on the wing, but I'm going to have a say, I'm going to have a touch, and we're going to dominate these last 4 minutes. And the fact that you did that by getting downhill, you got to the free throw line, you got a turnaround jumper that I know brought a whole lot of tears to a whole lot of eyes on the remembering of, my goodness, that shot from Tahad Pettiford in Atlanta in the postseason. I mean, that was about maybe a step inside where it was in the postseason, in the March Madness tournament, but my goodness, that same type of shot, Tahad Pettiford slams on the brakes, hits the turnaround, spin, fadeaway, falls to the floor because of the defender underneath him. He goes to the line and knocks down the free throw, a big and one, the old-fashioned three-point play that really put the game on ice, and my goodness, then the Tahad Pettiford poster that you had in the final minutes of the game where it was one of those, no, 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 yes, yeah, okay, all right, okay. Because Auburn was at the point of wanting to burn 20, 25 seconds off a shot clock and off the game clock. But my goodness, you have yourself a poster if you're an 8-year-old and you want to hang a Tahad Pettiford picture in your room or in your bedroom. I mean, that might be the picture to do so. And to see the energy from those two guys, especially, again, in that second half where you had 22 of your 36 points in those final 20 minutes, you saw just the energy being lifted. You saw almost a sense of relief being lifted from those two players because of how Keyshawn Hall and Tahad Pettiford had struggled in the last couple of games. And you now have again, you get 19 from Keyshawn Hall on 4 of 10 shooting. Tahad Pettiford, 5 of 12. He gives you 17, but you are 17 of 18 from the free throw line with those two guys. And it's a team that made their number, hit the record of their number of made free throws in a contest this season and tied the amount of free throws attempted in this game. And there's been a lot of the Ole Miss Rebel fan base that has gone out and made a little bit of an argument in this contest because of the free throw differential. And I'm here to tell you, if you watched any of the basketball game, and again, especially in the second half, and you still have an argument about it, and I understand, again, there's been plenty of games that Auburn has been on the negative side of this. But Ole Miss is 12 of 15 from the free throw line. Auburn was 32 of 39. But watch the way that these teams played offense. Watch the way that Auburn got downhill, drew the contact, or even initiated the contact, took advantage of players that weren't on the right spot, weren't in the right defensive positioning, and then watch what Ole Miss did. The color commentator talked a lot about it in the contest last night, about how Ole Miss shied away from contact and was a tough two-point-making team, and A.J. Storr was one of those guys, again, a very tough two-point maker, but every one of them was away from contact. You tried to avoid it with layups or with mid-range jumpers that was just simply avoiding any sort of contact. And so I'm not here to listen to any sort of conversation on why Auburn shots so many more free throws than the Rebels did. But how about the game from Keyshawn Murphy as well? My goodness. 16 points, 5 of 18, or 5 of 8, rather, from the floor, 14 rebounds, his second double-double in four games. That tied a career high in rebounds for Murph in one contest. And that right there just explained and showed the physicality that this Auburn basketball team played with. And again, in the second half, he had 11 points. And you went to him. You went to him on the elbow and let him go to work. Everybody saw the spin move that he put on the mismatched point guard and spin back towards the middle of the floor. Didn't get it on the first try, but got up and got the tip in on the offensive rebound. And that right there just showed the dominance that Auburn displayed in this contest. Looking at some of the team stats, I mean, my goodness. Some of them you feel like would tell you otherwise. If I were to tell you, okay, Ole Miss made three more threes than their average, which again we joked about yesterday, and apologies because I believe I picked the wrong Ole Miss Rebel. I did not pick Travis Perry, who averages 5.7 points per game. He had 15 on 5 of 8 from behind the arc. I believe I picked, was it Corey Chest or did I pick Giffa? But regardless, neither of them made too much noise, but it was Travis Perry in 23 minutes. It was 5 of 9 from the field and 5 of 8 from 3. But you go and you look at some of these team stats, and Auburn shoots 43% from the floor. And if you go and you watch the first half, you probably would tell you, or you'd probably tell me that I was lying, and I'd probably say that I was too. The fact that you still shot above 40%, you force Ole Miss to only shoot 36% from the floor. Look at the Auburn rebounding category. 42 rebounds for the Auburn Tigers in comparison to 26 for the Ole Miss Rebels. You're starting to see in these games, and even in the tough losses, you're not seeing a rebound differential that you feared you would possibly see in some of these games. Since Auburn doesn't have that stereotypical stand underneath the rim type of big, you worried what the rebounding numbers would look like in the postseason or throughout the regular season. We talked about it in the preseason and you worried about it, but you outscore this Ole Miss team or out-rebound them by 16, 42 to 26. You had 13 offensive rebounds to their 8 and 29 defensive rebounds to their 18. That tells a very big story in itself. But the points in the paint is another category to just be able to dive into. 38 to 14, Auburn won that individual category. Auburn had 38 points in the paint compared to Ole Miss's 14. That in itself should give you a further bullet point on the free throw line and why the difference was what it was. You had 38 points in the paint. Auburn's largest lead was 13 in the contest. You win it by 12. And Auburn gets back-to-back wins in the SEC, now 3-3. It makes you think about the Georgia game, makes you think a little bit about that A&M game, of what the season could look like despite the frustrations, despite only being 3-3 in conference play. You're now right in the heart of the SEC standings. What more could you truly ask for, as the confidence you felt like wasn't necessarily there from the fan base, or at least from our perspective here on the show, but a 12-point win on the road when you're favored adds a little bit of confidence moving forward. Auburn now 3-6 in these quad one games. You're 1-1 in quad two. I believe Ole Miss was 82nd or 84th in the overall net rankings. And so with the way that quad one numbers work with it being home games, neutral games, or road games. It has to be a net team in the top 75 to be a quad one win, or to be a quad one game, rather. And although it was on the road, Ole Miss, again, is listed as somewhere in the low 80s for the quad one. So they just slip into that quad two game, as is Texas A&M right now, which you would imagine that number will continue to rise, which, again, you lost the game. But we have learned plenty of times that it doesn't matter what your record is, as long as you play them, you're going to get a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. You're 3-6 in quad one, 1-1 in quad two, and you are 8-0 in quad three and four, which are ones that you just have to absolutely win that contest. So again, Auburn building a little bit of confidence as you continue on through the heart of this gauntlet that you're about to get playing. The 3-point line going to have to be a little bit more of a friend, but you love the rebounding category. You love the physicality that you saw again in those last 20 minutes, and you're going to have to use them against Florida here coming up soon. We'll take our first break here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line and flip to the other side of the state, as there is more drama going on in Tuscaloosa. We'll talk all about that and what the NCAA tried to do and was unable to do, and what do they try to do now. We'll talk about that as we're just off and running here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Christian Griffin here with you, solo in the studio this afternoon. No Jacob Goins, preparing to be back with us on the airwaves tomorrow afternoon. Just wrapped up our conversation on Auburn basketball defeating Ole Miss 78-66 last night in Oxford. Auburn now 3-3 in SEC play, right in the heart of it. And even despite the lack of success in the early part of the SEC schedule, and couldn't get over the hump again against Georgia and A&M. You're still at 3-3, right in the middle of Southeastern Conference standings, and you have the gauntlet of your schedule upcoming. We'll talk about that a little bit as the show goes on. But while we have just a little bit of time here before we have a really fun conversation coming up for you at 2:30, wanted to talk a little bit about just the drama that's going on inside Tuscaloosa that has now taken its waves around all of college basketball. And I'm sure most people have heard a little bit about it as of now, but for those that have not, it's a wild day and a wild twist, one of the wildest twists that sports, much less college sports, have seen in quite a long time, and it's all centered around a former Alabama center, Charles Bediako, a 7-foot player who last played for the Crimson Tide in NATO. It's in the 2022-2023 season. Left after a couple of years, left Tuscaloosa to chase his dream in the NBA, where he then went undrafted and spent a couple of years in the G League. And now he has sued the NCAA. And everybody kind of sat there and was like, okay, interesting. Why? Well, he sued the NCAA because they denied his appeal to come back for the Alabama Crimson Tide. And after being denied, we find out that yesterday in Tuscaloosa, there's a little bit of news. And today, we learn that Charles Bediako has been cleared to play for the Alabama Crimson Tide because of a 10-day restraining order that a judge in Tuscaloosa County put on this appeal, to where the NCAA can't do anything about it for 10 days. Interesting. Bediako filed a lawsuit in Tuscaloosa against the NCAA, again, after his appeal for reinstatement to play for Alabama was denied. The NCAA's position on this was clear, obviously. Once you sign an NBA contract, including two ways and Exhibit 10 deals, after leaving Alabama or after leaving college, again, this isn't necessarily an Alabama versus Auburn thing, anything. I don't want it to sound like that, because the emotional side of things aren't necessarily where this lies. But so under the current rules, he shouldn't be eligible to play college basketball. But again, earlier this afternoon, he was granted a temporary restraining order that blocks the NCAA from enforcing the eligibility denial for now. And so that means, again, Charles Bediako can come back and is immediately eligible to practice and play for Alabama for at least the next 10 days while a preliminary injunction hearing is scheduled for the 27th. Thankfully, they don't play anybody, so they don't have to worry about it. Oh, wait, shoot. Oh, that's Tennessee on the schedule on Saturday. Ooh, man. The timing. Pretty impressive. If he plays against Tennessee this weekend, this will be a historic moment in sports, because no former player who has signed a professional NBA contract after playing college basketball has ever returned to college basketball like this. And again, especially even more so after the G League. But now the G League and all of that conversation really takes a turn on what is college basketball. What is everything, because Alabama still is openly in favor of it because of, quote, the University of Alabama supports Charles and his ongoing efforts to be reinstated for competition while he works to complete his degree. Oh, okay. It's just for him to be able to complete his degree and then have a little side hobby, right? I'm sure he's not going to get paid very handsomely for it. What a time. What a wild time. We'll talk a little bit more about this as the show goes on. I know Daryl Daprich has some thoughts on it as well. But we flip to the golf course. Davis Thompson, former Lee Scott Warrior, PGA Pro, joins us on the phone lines next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And while we put a little pin in a fun conversation, or maybe not necessarily a fun conversation, with all of the drama going on in Tuscaloosa, we do flip over to the golf world for just a little bit. I like to think of myself, or I guess I should introduce myself, as the voice of the Lee Scott Warriors. Love to be able to celebrate those guys and know that I have a whole lot of Lee Scott faithful that are really pumped up for a really fun conversation that we get to have here on the phone lines here this afternoon. A former Lee Scott Academy Warrior, a standout former Georgia Bulldog, and now a PGA Tour winner. Davis Thompson, the living proof of what you can be from Lee Scott Academy, from Auburn to Athens, competing on the biggest stage. Man, we appreciate you for taking the time to join us. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me.
Well, again, we have been following you from the Lee Scott world of things and a little bit distantly, but wanted to be able to spend a little bit of time. I know that you are getting ready for your first event here coming up tomorrow in Palm Springs, but wanted to spend just a little bit of time working your way back from your high school days. And you grew up here in Auburn, starred at Lee Scott Academy. When you look back on years like that, how much of the environment did that shape you to be into the competitor that you are here today?
Yeah, I think growing up playing multiple sports at Lee Scott, playing football until about seventh grade and then playing basketball and golf kind of throughout high school really helped that competitiveness, and also helped with stuff like time management, things of that nature. And a lot of great memories looking back on my Lee Scott days.
Was there ever a moment at Lee Scott where your golf game really shifted from just something that you loved or something you did as a little bit of a passion into something that you knew you could chase at the highest level?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say there's a specific moment. I knew kind of once I got into eighth and ninth grade, started to hear from some schools a little bit, and it was kind of my clear path going forward that's sure what I wanted to do, and I wanted to play college golf. And yeah, I thought about the pro playing professionally, but when I was in high school, I was just trying to, you know, get some offers and play college golf. And then once I got to college, I really started to think about professional golf. And I was just able to take it from there.
Well, again, you go on to play at the University of Georgia, become one of the more accomplished players in their program's history. What did college golf teach you that junior golf or high school golf simply couldn't?
Yeah, it taught me a lot of things. Talked about just like how committed you have to be to each and every shot. And also just like things outside of golf, just like managing your time and being able to keep up with your grades and, you know, tutoring sessions, workouts, all that sort of stuff. So it taught me a lot, but, you know, thankfully, I felt like Lee Scott kind of prepared me for that a little bit. And, yeah, I mean, that competitiveness and just driven discipline was just kind of something I've always had. And, thankful to, kind of start it out at Lee Scott and then continue it on at Georgia.
We have professional PGA golfer and tour winner Davis Thompson here with us on the phone lines on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Davis, when you decided to turn professional, what was the part of that jump that was the biggest adjustment for you, whether that was mentally, physically, emotional, just for the gauntlet of what the PGA Tour holds?
Yeah, I think all three, honestly. I mean, mentally, like when you turn pro, you're playing week after week as opposed to high school and college golf, you kind of play one event and kind of take a few weeks off and then go play another event. But playing in the pros, you're playing some 3-4, sometimes 5 events in a row. So it's a lot, and you can't get too high or too low. You got to be mentally and emotionally stable. And physically, you just have to kind of be in shape to handle that grind, especially with the travel. And mentally, you just have to be able to flush each shot, each round, and just keep moving forward and keep grinding and trying to get better every single week throughout the year.
And I'm sure the Korn Ferry Tour obviously helped with that. That little bit of adjustments compared to, again, you mentioned the high school level, but just preparing for that grind on tour. I want to combine a couple of things here, if it's okay with you. Your first PGA Tour win. I know that's something that every golfer just absolutely dreams about, although 99% of us listening will never even come close to achieving any sort of goal like that. But what do you remember about that win that week, and how much did it change the way you believed in yourself moving forward?
Yeah, it definitely helped give me confidence, obviously, that I can win and play with these guys week in and week out. Main thing I remember is just I was playing really well going into the event, and I feel like I did a really good job of not thinking about that as much and just kind of staying in my process and staying, hole by hole oriented as opposed to thinking big picture and thinking that I could win that week. But, I just remember getting off to good starts in every round. And, like I said, I was playing well, knew I had that confidence, and then was able to finish it off on the weekend, which was really cool.
I would say so. I mean, 28 under par, winning the 2024 John Deere Classic, and a 7-under final round to go along with 8-under on the first, 4-under on the second, 9-under on the third, and again, 7-under on that Sunday. Were you leading going into Sunday, or was there a little bit of a group that you knew that you had to sit there and go out and compete with, or was it more of an able to, you could hold your little hand out and stiff arm the rest of the group, knowing that if you played your best golf, you were going to get it done?
Yeah, I think I had a 2-shot lead, maybe.
Okay.
It was something like that, but that course is kind of a birdie fest, so I knew I had to stay aggressive.
Sure.
And made a long putt on the first hole, and that just kind of calmed the nerves a good bit and settled me in. I was able to play really well on the front nine, and then once I did that, I kind of coasted on the back nine and was able to just kind of make a bunch of pars coming in and really enjoy that walk-up 18.
When you look at your golf game as a whole right now, whether that was last year, whether that was working through the offseason or some things that you're working on to get going here tomorrow, what does consistency mean at your level? I know that there's not too much consistency when a lot of us go out and play, and so when you take it from round to round or week to week, what does consistency look like to you?
For me, it's about just my body, just like staying in shape, keeping my energy levels the same, just making sure I'm doing the right things in the gym to kind of stay mobile and kind of be able to hit the points I want in my swing. So it's mainly that. And then, you know, as far as the golf stuff, it's just being confident in my course preparation and being confident in my overall preparation to be able to just go out and execute on a Thursday morning.
How much do you and the caddy obviously talk week after week and just day by day when you're going out and preparing for the course layout? I mean, we know, we see the little clips that TV gives us of the really cool conversations with the player and the caddy, but how much goes on behind the scenes that many people don't see when it goes to knowing that this is where you need to hit it, this is the spot you need to be, this is the layup, can we get there, can we not? How much of that do we not see that goes on even before the round even takes place?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll talk with my caddy before each round and kind of go over the hole locations and the wind direction and kind of figure like, okay, these holes we can be aggressive to, and these other holes making par is probably going to be a good score. So just kind of that sort of stuff. I think outside of that, it's more so of my caddy does a great job of keeping my mind off of golf kind of between shots.
Cause, okay.
I mean, you're out there for a long time, 4.5, 5 hours, and, you know, it can be a grind. So just kind of keeping it loose and fun between golf shots is huge for me, as opposed to just grinding and you know, putting too much mental strain on each shot.
It's funny you mention that, because I know there's been plenty of other conversations with professionals and their caddies, and how some caddies want to take their mind off of it while the other ones want to make sure that they're focused, tell them every single piece of information. So the fact that you are much more of the, hey, take my mind off of golf when we're walking in the middle of the fairway or walking up to the greens, it's cool to see how that mentality changes per golfer. You mentioned your Sunday walk on the 2024 John Deere Classic, where, again, you shot 28 under to win by 4 shots. How do you personally manage the moments when everything gets that much more intense, right? Everything gets that much more magnified. How do you simply go back to your preparation, your practice, and knowing that it's just another shot that you need to convert?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, like, if you're in those moments, you're in them for a reason, right? Like, you're playing well. And so I take that confidence with me. And just know that, hey, I'm here for a reason. I'm here because I played really well, and I have the confidence to go out and keep playing well. So I love getting in the hunt, getting into contention. I feel like it brings out the best in my game. And, you know, hopefully we can do more of that this year and get rolling.
Off the course, the PGA obviously takes you all around the world, all around the country. Is there a place the tour has taken you last year or in the past that has been a major standout or even surprised you?
I mean, honestly, I feel like the tour does a great job of picking out great spots to travel to. I mean, the West Coast swing is amazing just because you have, you know, for me, starting the year here in Palm Springs, I mean, the weather is perfect. It's 75 and sunny about every day. I know my wife loves the West Coast swing. And then, you know, the Florida swing is fun as well. And then you kind of get into Texas, and then you kind of go all over. So it's fun. I mean, the tour usually chases the sunshine, so the weather's usually good where we go, which is nice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I hadn't been to many places on the West Coast before started playing on tour, and I think the West Coast is really fun.
You mentioned getting ready for Palm Springs here coming up tomorrow. You mentioned when we were off the air that as soon as we hang up, you're going to go play a couple holes, make sure that your mind and your preparation is right for the start of your season. And as you get ready for this first event, what does that preparation look like? Maybe not today, but leading up, or what are some of the biggest things that you've worked off in the off season that you're most focused on trying to sharpen up as you head into this weekend?
Yeah, I know it sounds simple, but I feel like I played a lot of holes in December and early January getting ready just to kind of get into playing shape.
Sure,
and
yeah.
that scoring mode and just simply getting the ball in the hole, and did a lot of that. And then, I mean, this week just trying to, you know, see the golf courses, see if they changed anything, kind of get the speed of the greens down. And then, yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple once we get, you know, to the event. It's more so just trusting your prep and just trying to go out and execute golf shots.
We have Davis Thompson, PGA Tour pro and winner, here with us on the phone lines on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Davis, zooming out just a little bit, do you have goals that you set for yourself this season, and how do you measure your success now versus what you want to check off once you got that first win and working into this season?
Yeah, I mean, I have weekly goals that I kind of want to check off. Part of it is, you know, having a good diet, staying healthy, feeling confident in my prep on the golf course. And then I have a few big picture goals that hopefully I can accomplish this year. And yeah, once the season ends, I can kind of look back and kind of go week by week and see if I, you know, did what I wanted to do, or if there's some areas I need to improve on, or, you know, hopefully I can look back and check off all the goals that I had set for myself. And hopefully it's a pretty successful year.
I know that the driver and then around the greens are the priorities and what you have proven the best, at least on tour, when you're looking at some of the statistics. Got a cool little text to my personal phone on, if you had an ideal club in every single situation, what would it be? And then if you had a perfect ideal golf hole, whether it's a perfect yardage, the perfect shot shape, and your favorite club in hand, what does that look like for you?
I mean, I would love like a tree-lined par five, where I can just put my driver in the fairway and then have a chance to go at the green and have a chance for an eagle opportunity or birdie opportunity. But love par fives, love the way I'm driving the ball right now. So yeah, hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Davis, this has been again awesome. This is something that we've looked forward to having you on the airwaves, on the phone line here with us, from Lee Scott Academy to Georgia, and again now winning and competing on the PGA Tour. It's been awesome to see your journey, especially over the past couple of years. We truly appreciate all of your time that you spent here with us, man. Go play your last couple of practice holes, and we'll be sure to keep up with you here this weekend and throughout the season. And whenever you make it back to Auburn, man, you let us know and we'll go play around.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, Christian.
Yeah,
have
man.
A good one.
You as well. Davis Thompson here joining us on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Again, a PGA Tour pro, PGA professional, and a PGA winner. Hopefully we can add to that tally here coming up this season. When we come back, we'll wrap up the hour number one, get you into hour number two, where we have a really fun conversation with Daryl Daprich to start hour number two. All of that when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. And man, what a cool conversation that was. I've been hearing the name for years, at least Scott Academy. Had to get him on the phone line, get him on the airwaves. Davis Thompson, PGA Tour professional and tour winner from the 2024 John Deere Classic, where, man, you're looking at the names that were on that final leaderboard on that Sunday, and how cool is it to be able to have somebody here in the Auburn-Opelika area, and especially, again, from Lee Scott, where we obviously have a lot of emotional ties to be able to pull out one of those wins. Man, hopefully we can see plenty more of those here this season. He mentioned, he finished up his morning prep this morning, hopped on the phone call with me because, again, it was 12:30 over there in California. And when he gets done, he's going to go grab his bag and he's going to go play a couple more holes and make sure that the iron game is where it needs to be. And before he sets up shop for tomorrow and Friday, and then hopefully we see him play into the weekend as well, trying to see the exact tee time that he has here tomorrow. I thought I had it pulled up, but I might not have the correct one. I believe I have. Oh, I'm on the. I'm on the wrong course. Well, trying to get it pulled up. There we go. He tees off with Michael Brennan at 11:14. And so that will be Central Time. And so you'll be able to be able to keep up with him and his status throughout the week. And again, hopefully into the weekend in there as well. Man, appreciate his time for taking the time. I know that he's really busy. And again, the day before you go out and you play your first rounds and your first tournament of the season, to be able to take some time to spend with us was really, really cool. Hoping to get him on a couple times throughout the season, maybe quarterly, to be able to talk about the game, talk about what he's able to do so far in that season. Lee Scott Academy, again, we're talking about it while we have a minute or two. Picked up two really nice wins over Beulah last night, 59-19 and 80-47. The girls are now 13-8. The boys, 18-3. We got to celebrate Mr. Hayden Harper yesterday inside of Sanford Gymnasium. We'd celebrated Clark Ivett, the sophomore guard, for hitting 1,000 career points, being the newest member of the Comma Club. Last night, we got to celebrate Harper for another Comma Club. Maybe not another Comma, but a step up. He hit 2,000 career points last night, so that was absolutely incredible to be able to be there. I was the color commentator when Hayden hit 1,000 career points, and so being able to see how life progresses, almost a full circle moment to be able to celebrate with him and his family after the game, get some really cool pictures with Hayden. We called timeout as soon as he hit his 11th point, as that was the magic number, working our way throughout the girls' game and throughout the pregame show. I got multiple texts throughout the game of, man, what is this 11 that you keep talking about? Or why is it 6? Why is it 3 now? And Hayden didn't get it in the first quarter, but subbed in early in the second, had a layup, and you saw him clapping his way the entire time down the floor, caught it about 3 feet beyond the left wing, and absolutely no hesitation that he was going to pull it, and there wasn't much hesitation of him not burying it either. And so we got to celebrate Hayden last night on hitting to a career 2,000 points at Lee Scott Academy. So everything really going good over at the Academy. We're back in action tomorrow at Dadeville. You can catch all of that action on Tiger Country 104.5, tigercountry.net, and that Radio Alabama app. We appreciate Davis once again for being able to take some time and join us in hour number one. And our guest heavy lineup does not stop, because when we come back, we got Double D Daryl Dapritz joining us on the phone lines. We'll talk basketball, we'll talk football, and maybe a little surprise in there as well. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get you underway in hour number two here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. Boo the hotkeys around. I know for those that weren't with us in hour number one, no Jacob Goins here with us in the studio this afternoon. Feeling a little bit under the weather, but my goodness, did we have a fun hour number one. We got to talk and recap Auburn and Ole Miss. We also got to talk a little bit of the drama going on in Alabama. I'm sure we'll be able to continue that conversation here in just a few moments. We also got to talk with PGA Tour professional and PGA Tour winner Davis Thompson from Lee Scott Academy here with us. He joined us on the phone lines to recap last season, talk a little bit about the offseason, and man, dive into his first tournament starting tomorrow morning. Again, that's at 11:13 tee time for Mr. Thompson and what some of his goals are for the season. So an incredible hour number one, but I don't think we need too much of an introduction for hour number two, because we have our guy Daryl Dapritz of Locked On Auburn and the Barn here with us. Double D, what's going on?
What's up? What's up? You're flying solo today. I hope Jacob's listening. I hope he gets well soon.
Yeah, I hope he's listening, but we also have to make sure that, you know, we give him a little hell for not being here.
True, yeah. I talked to him earlier today, and kind of rough. It's going around. So let's just hope he gets well soon.
Well, we appreciate your time, as always, for joining us here to start hour number two. And know we got you on a little bit earlier than we usually do. But, man, with so much going on, figured that there was so much that we needed to talk about and want to be able to talk about. We started the show here this afternoon talking about the biggest disease in all of sports, and that being winning. And you feel like Auburn might be in a little bit of that bug right now. But, man, it feels good to be able to have that feeling.
Yeah, they've won three out of their last four on the basketball court.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
They've drawn even in the SEC, 3-3. I think the way they've done it, first of all, don't ever underestimate how important a road win is in the SEC. Look at the other schools last night and how they struggled on the road. And Auburn wins on the road in a place that's traditionally tough to play against a good coach and does it double digits. And I think the way they're winning is very important, because if they're early in the year, there was this concern about inside game and post presence and points in the paint. And Auburn's just been bludgeoning people inside the block and scoring, you know, a lot of points inside. So I think that's important. I know there's a concern about the outside game and the 3-point shooting, but look, you've got to absolutely be encouraged by dominating rebounds, going to the line as much as they did. And I think that's, going to the free throw line to me, Christian, is an extension of points in the paint.
100%.
Meaning you're going inside, they're fouling you, so you're getting to the foul line.
Yes.
So I think there's a correlation between how many times you go to the free throw line and how often you try to score inside. It's very rare, and it did happen once last night where Auburn got fouled behind the 3-point line. But I just think there's an extension. And so how they're doing it is very impressive. Not only that they are doing it, but how they're getting it done, I think, is encouraging.
Yeah, we mentioned it. 38 points in the paint to Ole Miss's 14, and you shot 39 free throws to Ole Miss's 15, and made the joke earlier on the show in hour number one about the Ole Miss fans that are complaining about the free throw differential. And if you watched any sort of the contest, you saw the physicality that Stephen Pearl's team came out with, especially in that second half. So I completely agree. Those 32 free throws should be added to the points in the paint category, to where Auburn has absolutely dominated over the past couple of games. The rebounding line in there as well. You out-rebound the Rebels by 16 on the road. That's a big-time recipe for success. Keyshawn Murphy, a large thanks to that last night. But I know you wanted to be able to dive into the 3-point line conversation.
Yes.
Auburn is only 4 of 37 in their last 80 minutes, but I know that you have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think something that's very interesting is, if you look at what happened last night, Auburn's 70 of their 78 points, 70 of the 78 points Auburn got last night was either inside in the paint, points in the paint, or at the foul line. I mean, and so I looked at that, and this is where in media sometimes you have to put aside your own personal beliefs, which you think is, which you're, I mean, nothing wrong with having your opinion and being passionate if it's an informed opinion. But the reason why you ask questions is sometimes you can see things in a different light than you may think you know or feel strongly about. And I was reminded of that last night as I was doing shows and doing the live chats and all that, and the Barncast. You're like, okay, this is too simple. You're killing a team in the paint. Why are you shooting 37 threes over two games and keep shooting them when you're the path to victory is right there? Why overthink it? And it got me thinking and saying out loud, you know, at what point, if you're the head coach, do you just say, hey, we need to dial down the threes, quit taking threes? And, you know, that was my solution for it. That was my mindset.
Sure.
And it was kind of eating at me today that I couldn't be at the press conference last night and ask Coach Pearl, hey, 70 or 78 points for the foul line or inside. Did you talk to your team at halftime about maybe dialing it back a little bit? They only shot 7 threes in the second half, but I found out later they did that on their own. That wasn't a coach mandate. And I was really upset that I could not ask that question. And especially because, as you know, Christian, sometimes if you've got listeners or viewers, they want to know certain things. And I think it's our responsibility in media to not only ask questions that we think are important, but maybe that if it's a good question that a fan wants to know. So
sure.
It was bugging me today. So I just shot a text to Coach Pearl and just, you know, asked him that question and talked about the stats. And you know, he was very gracious and actually called me back, and we had a phone conversation about it. And he was very, very blunt and very direct and was right on point where he said, no, we're not going to stop shooting the three, because they were good looks. some of them were down, all the way down, and came back out. No one forced a shot. We want guys shooting good shots and open looks, and we will continue to shoot threes. And he said also, these last two games, you can't use those as an outlier, because the previous three or four games, Auburn was shooting a three pretty effectively.
Sure.
And when you get into a game like they're going to play Saturday against Florida, let's be honest, you're going to have to hit the three because of the size disparity between Florida and Auburn to win that game. So he made some good points, talked about how you don't just stop shooting it because you go through a little bit of a dry spell. They've been shooting it well coming into these last two games. And my goodness, you're going to need to be able to shoot the three well, and you're going to need that three later on in the year to beat some teams. So gave me a different perspective on it, and, you know, makes total sense.
And that's why he's the best in the business. Daryl Daprich, a man of the people, answering all of the questions. And if he doesn't know him, he'll get the answers. He'll get the questions for you. Auburn, you mentioned it, only four made threes in their last 80 minutes. That being said, you've only allowed 133 points in the last 80 minutes. And that was something that was a little bit of a concern early on in non-conference play, is if the offense wasn't necessarily following the defense, you kind of saw that reciprocated on the defensive end of the floor. You haven't seen that, Daryl, over the past couple of games. Not necessarily the prettiest win inside of Neville Arena, not necessarily the prettiest win in Oxford, but you're 2-0 in SEC play and back-to-back wins. You're now 3-3 as a whole, and you're right back to where you were hoping to be, right in the middle of the pack in the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, and I think a very underrated point you just made is at the beginning of the year, there were two concerns that every Auburn fan was complaining about. We're not guarding like we're used to seeing Auburn teams guard, and there's no post presence at all, whether it's defensively or offensively. Well, those problems have kind of taken care of themselves. Auburn is guarding and defending like demons. I mean, they are getting it done, and they're starting to defend like Auburn teams, the reputation of Auburn teams. Rebounding is a direct outlet to their transition game. And if you're not rebounding the basketball, not only are you giving up second-chance points, you cannot fuel your break. You can't get your outlet going. Auburn's doing a good job on that. Auburn's getting a lot of dunks, which tells me they're being less selfish. The assist-to-turnover ratio. The only thing Ole Miss did better than Auburn last night was points off turnovers and their bench points. And when you have a thin bench like Auburn does, I mean, Jovich came in, played 15 minutes. Coach Pearl mentioned he was very pleased with Jovich's game. He didn't see more minutes because of the way Murphy and Sway were playing, going with the hot hand. And that's what you need to do. Whatever's working from a strategic standpoint, you stick with, and whatever players – are getting it done. So the way Auburn's defending, their transition game, their high-flying dunk game, post, all that right now is clicking. I say all that to say, to beat a team like Florida and some of these bigger teams, yes, you are going to have to hit threes at least a 35% clip, I think, to have a chance. If Auburn does that, Christian, if they start adding that into their repertoire of their offense, watch out come into the year, because then they'll be very balanced.
We got our guy Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn with us, as he is every single Wednesday at 3 o'clock, or 3:05 is when we technically get him on the phone lines. But man, giving some great thoughts, giving some great insight on some of the questions. Wanted your, I guess, overall thoughts on the Auburn bench, which you mentioned is a little bit thin, or maybe not even the bench, but just the team as a whole, right? You have five key players that you rely on outside of Keyshawn Hall and Tahad Pettiford. And over the last two games, you had gotten 55 points from those five other players in the the Missouri game, and then again in the South Carolina game, and you saw the lack of Keyshawn Hall and Tahad Pettiford in those games. Last night was a little bit different. Only 42 points from those five players, but 36 from Keyshawn Hall, Tahad Pettiford, 22 of those coming in the second half. Your thoughts on what was possibly said in that locker room to get those guys going downhill, or like what you most possibly said, they just figured it out on their own?
Well, I think bench scoring is going to be absolutely key for Auburn, because I know that secondary scoring is going to be. I think most nights you know what you're going to get from Tahad and you know what you're going to get from Hall. The key is, what do you get from Overton, Freeman, and Murphy, and Jovich, right? That's the key to me, and Sway to a certain extent. Who emerges as that third dude that can get you 12, 13, 14 a night? Jovich is starting to figure it out. He just is. Murphy, is it healthy? as healthy as he's been all year. And the mental aspect of getting over an injury and jumping and landing is gone. I think there was some tentativeness early when he came back because, you know,
that's a good point.
You just don't want to re-injure it, and you're a little bit tentative to do that, so you play a little bit more careful, and that's gone. He's playing free and easy, and he is really emerging. And that, like I said, Jovic is figuring it out. Sway is a freshman, and so I think he is starting to get more assertive. That three he hit was big. Mm-hmm. Freeman coming off the bench seems to be, you know, really comfortable. So who is it going to be? Auburn, when you go eight deep, their eight dudes can play with anybody in the conference. The problem is it drops off significantly after that. And that's where you are a little bit worried it come tournament format, like SEC tournament where you may play three games in 4 days.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the NCAA tournament where you play on a Friday and a Sunday or a Thursday and a Saturday. You've got to have depth. And going eight deep, I know Blake comes off the bench and gives them minutes and plays pretty good defense, but I just think that's where it could hurt. Auburn winning this game last night after only having 2 days rest was the most shocking part of that to me.
Yeah.
Because with a team that only goes eight deep, 2 days rest is usually fatal. Now they come back and they got a nice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday stretch before they go into Gainesville. So that's where I think it can hurt you is just tournament format. You want to get a little deeper. And Auburn's used to playing 10 guys, and they've had to shorten that this year because of Bashir being hurt. And Emeka having his health issues.
Double D, what's your thoughts on the gridiron before we flip back to basketball here for just a moment? But Alex Golish is bringing in at least 13, and I say at least because the transfer portal is no longer opening for entries, but you can still gain a couple more portal additions. But bringing in at least 13 offensive linemen for Coach Tyler Hudnick from the high school level and then eight on the transfer side of things to get up, to get in shape, and get ready for 2026. What excites you about the transfer portal as now you primarily see it finished, maybe a couple or two stragglers in there, but what did you see that impresses you for the 2026 season with this coaching staff?
Well, I think the biggest thing that excites me is I'm getting some reading the tea leaves and some smoke that Auburn's not done, and there could be a couple more important additions that hit in the next week, so we'll see if that comes to fruition.
Sure.
What they've done to this point is address needs. They needed bodies on the offensive line. They needed guys with experience. Right now, it's just a hodgepodge. It's a potpourri. How does that all fit? You know, offensive line, you need cohesiveness. You need chemistry. You need it to gel. How does that happen in 5-6 months, right? And so that's important, and I think that'll be the thing. They've got the bodies. There's no doubt they have the quantity. I want to see how the quality plays out. I'm excited about some of the defensive line addition. I think there's a kid on campus right now from Old Dominion that's a really, really dynamic running back. I don't know where he fits in. That's a head-scratcher to me because I think Auburn's running back room is extremely full and one of the strongest positions, as is defensive back. Are these kids that are getting signed for next year, right? You know, hey, come now, learn the system, and then you'll mm-hmm. compete for a starting job next year. Could be. It could be in lieu of signing a big class, which Auburn didn't do from a high school standpoint. They signed 4 or 5 less than they normally do. So I like the strategy. I like the culture. I think the biggest thing I'm excited about is just watching what could happen with a really competent passing game, passing attack, what happens with receivers that, you know, run the right routes, hang on to the ball. There's just a lot of things that I think we'll see a cultural shift that right now we can't put our finger on, but we'll know it when we see it next year. And I think you know, that's the time that you and Jacob will turn around the press box and look at me and nod, and we'll go, yeah, we know it. Let me see it.
And you'll toss us down some Chex Mix or whatever it is?
Some Chex Mix, a little rye bread action.
Sure,
yeah, a little miniature rye bread. That came in handy last week. I appreciate you all surprising me with that. But I think that it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to, like, verbalize or put your finger on exactly what it is. But, you know, like I said, that expression, you know it when you see it. And mm-hmm. I think we'll even start to see hints of that come A-Day.
And Daryl, before we let you get out of here, wanted you to have the opportunity to give your thoughts again on this wild conversation in college basketball with Alabama Crimson Tide center Charles Bediako. And the way that I have informed this is not necessarily a Auburn versus Alabama conversation, because that's just putting emotional feelings into this conversation rather than looking at it just from the NCAA perspective and the future of college basketball. Again, this is a player that played for Coach Oates in 2022 and 2023, went undrafted after declaring for the NBA draft early, signed NBA contracts, and has been playing in the NBA G League. And then this week, sued the NCAA to regain his ability to play for Alabama, which was then denied. And then earlier today, we find out that a judge in Tuscaloosa signs a warrant, a temporary restraining order, basically keeping the NCAA out of this investigation or this situation for 10 days. And so you could see Bediako play for Tennessee or play against Tennessee here this weekend. What would that do to college sports if he steps on the floor on Saturday?
Well, that's the key. The 27th is the actual hearing, and if they can reverse the judge's injunction and then he can't play anymore. So if you go through all this to have him play one game, whatever, it's a joke. The NCAA is so powerless and toothless right now. I mean, I liken this, it isn't an Auburn-Alabama thing, but what if in the early 90s when Auburn got put on probation for what they did with the Pat Dye, Eric Ramsey thing, if a Lee County judge would have given an injunction against the NCAA about keeping Auburn off television and said, nope, there's a restraining order, can't do it, they're going to be on television. I mean, it's just there's no power or teeth in this. And again, I mean, it's going down that slippery slope of what college athletics is becoming. I think it's an absolute joke that once you leave, you leave. I don't care if you play G League and do not play 1 minute in the NBA, you should not be allowed to come. If you make yourself eligible for the NBA draft, I don't think you should be able to come back into college. And I know that Auburn doesn't have, other than I think Wendell Green, who, by the way, has 2 years left.
Yeah, I did see him tweet that out today.
Yeah, he'd be a nice backup point guard option, would he not? You don't. They're toothless. There's nothing they can do now. You know, I also find it comical that a judge in Tuscaloosa is the one that made this ruling. I mean, how biased does that look?
It's just ironic for the placement. That's all.
I'm gonna say this, and I'm not gonna go too deep. He also presided and ruled over another case a few years ago that was controversial that had to do with the coach's daughter.
Sure.
And he was the judge that presided over that. So make that what you will and connect the dots. So I think it's a joke and it's a laughing stock. And I would say the same thing if JT Thor came back to play for Auburn.
Yeah. I mean,
who, and the hypocrisy of Nate Oates coming out with the NJI decision for Baylor and criticizing that, saying, what are we doing? We're taking away playing time and opportunities for high school kids. And then 3 weeks later, they do that. Looks like the biggest hypocrite walking the face of the earth.
Yeah.
So.
And the University
of
Alabama.
The same thing if it was Georgia, Arizona.
Right.
Arizona State, Duke, North Carolina. It doesn't matter. I would be embarrassed if I was, you know, if Thor, you know, or somebody like that. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
All I know is Steven could call Cheney, Denver, go get them to sue for another year. I mean, heck, go get LeBron. He hasn't played college basketball. Go get Luka, Wemby, whoever you need to, even if it's just for a game or two to try and get a win added to your column. Double D here with us on the phone lines. Man, I appreciate your time and for joining us here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. No, I kept you a minute or two longer. Before we get you out of here, plug everything you got, everything that you got upcoming, and where people need to go to find anything they want.
Well, the most exciting thing to plug is that I will be in studio with you guys next Wednesday from 3 to 4 for an hour, taking calls, answering questions, hanging out with my guys in the studio, and then I'll leave there to go cover the Texas Auburn game. So I'm more excited about that than I've been in a long time. I'll be in there face-to-face with you guys, helping host the show for an hour.
Yeah, a whole lot of fun. We're looking forward to that, and we'll make our way over to Neville Arena, but excited to get you in here, the booth with us, be able to have a really, really fun conversation, a really good hour to finish up the Wednesday edition of On the Line next Wednesday. But as always, we appreciate you for taking the time to join us here this afternoon.
Have a great week. Talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Daryl Dapprich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn here with us on the phone lines. But again, next week will not be on the phone lines. He will be in the studio having a really fun conversation for a whole hour, not just 3 to 3:20 from 3 until 4 p.m. But yeah, maybe Steven just needs to give a call to Luka or Giannis or whoever he needs to try and get them, because they haven't played college basketball. So just do what you need to do and make sure that it's really timely on like a Wednesday, so that way you're on a Tuesday, so you can then still play your Wednesday and your Saturday game before any sort of conversation can be held, and they can't go back and vacate it, so just do whatever you need to do. We'll take our break, come back, have another conversation on a completely different sport, something that we talked a little bit about yesterday with Baseball America, perfect game in D1 baseball, giving a little bit of love to the Auburn Tigers. We'll have a really fun conversation coming up at 3:30, but we'll talk about some of the best games in college basketball last night and tonight here coming up as we continue on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here in the studio. Christian Griffin here, solo, rather, in the studio here with you on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Daryl Dapprich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn for joining us here on the phone lines. And again, for those that may have missed the announcements, he was with us on the phone lines today, but will not be with us on the phone lines next Wednesday, as he will be joining us in studio for an entire hour, hour number two, from 3 to 4 next Wednesday. It will be myself, Jacob Goins, and Daryl Dapprich. Man, having a great time taking your phone calls, taking your text messages. Should be a really, really fun time here in the studio. We'll then make our way straight to Neville Arena for Auburn and Texas, and what should be a really, really fun game in there as well. And when we had just a minute or two, again, the music's kicking me out here in about 10 seconds or so, we're talking about court cases and suings. And rather than talking a little basketball on the football field, we have seen a lot of rumors and a lot of rumblings going around that there is optimism for Trinidad Chambliss to be granted another year to play college football for the Ole Miss Rebels. He went back and sued the NCAA back on January 16th in Mississippi. And so you could see another quarterback in the SEC and one of the top quarterbacks in the SEC if that were going to be the case. And what a story that would be for somebody who left Auburn and is with the Ole Miss Rebels now. But I digress from that conversation. We move over to the baseball diamond when we come back. Going to have another special guest joining us here on the phone lines to talk about Butch Thompson and the boys. We talk some Auburn baseball coming up next.
Halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Christian Griffin here with you in the studio solo. Got some empty chairs surrounding me here in the ESPN 106.7 studio. But man, we're having a good time here on the show this afternoon. We appreciate Daryl Dapprich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn for joining us here to start hour number two. We got to talk all things Auburn basketball. He got to have a really fun conversation with Stephen Pearl on the phone earlier this afternoon and ask a couple of really important questions that he had, and he felt responsible for making sure that the people understood that, and he shared that information with all of that here on the show today. And so if you haven't, or if you missed hour number one, or I guess you missed the first 90 minutes of the show, we have all of our station podcasts on Radio Alabama, the Radio Alabama app, and ESPNAU.com. You can go back and listen to any of our podcasts. We'll have this one posted for you here shortly once this show comes to a close. And again, didn't do too much of a big recap since we had Daryl on the phone lines. Had to get him on another minute or two prior to when we usually do, again, with it just being me here in the studio. But again, in hour number one, we talked a little bit of Ole Miss and the Auburn win over Ole Miss, rather, picking up their first true road win of the season. Auburn getting back-to-back wins in the SEC, moving them to 3-3 in conference play, right in the middle of the standings. We talked about the three-point line, and Darrell added to that. You're only 4 of 37 in your last 80 minutes, yet how that hasn't affected the scoring and hasn't affected the defense for this team. Keyshawn Murphy with 16 and 14, his second double-double in four games, and tied his career high in rebounds with 14. We talked about the physicality that this Auburn team played with. We got to dive into the Charles Bediako situation, which we talked a little bit about in hour number one. We talked a little bit about it in hour number two with Darrell. I'm going to save a lot of the juiciness of the conversation with Jacob because I know he wants to have his thoughts out there as well. We also got Davis Thompson, former Lee Scott Academy Warrior and former UGA Bulldog and a PGA Tour player, a PGA Tour winner back in 2024, hoping that he can continue his success here this season. He is preparing. Probably on the golf course again right now following our conversation. He gets it up in Palm Springs, the 11:13 tee time over there tomorrow, hopefully working his way into the weekend, and hopefully we get him on the phone lines a couple of times throughout the season in there as well. Gave a couple Lee Scott updates before we talked a little bit of Auburn. With Darrell, we got thoughts on Auburn basketball. We got thoughts on Auburn football. He mentioned a recruit for Auburn, an old Dominion running back is on the plains right now, and how the questions of what that's going to look like for the Auburn offense, what that could possibly look like if the running back room doesn't fill up. Whereas Auburn, you felt like the offensive line, again, you're not allowed to be picky whatsoever with the names that you get and the stars or whatever, but Auburn optimistic for a couple other gets that they could receive here in the next couple of days. And we're going to actually save our Lee Scott or our Auburn baseball segment, rather, trying to pull up a couple other things to switch around the rundown just a little bit, which led to the multiple tracks of thought. But going to talk a little baseball coming up here to end the show this afternoon, maybe take a little bit of an early break, but did want to be able to dive into some of the college basketball scores last night and tonight. Because, my goodness, there were some really, really good games outside the SEC last night. You had Michigan with a 14-point win over Indiana. Elliott Cadeau scored 10 of his 19 points in just the opening minutes of the first half, and is a really, really good point guard. That conversation still hurts Auburn fans just a little bit because Elliott and Tahad, again, played, I believe it was AAU ball all growing up together, and wanted to play together at Auburn, but Elliott had to make the decision before Tahad did about entering his name, or removing his name, rather, from the transfer portal. Elliott had to, or from the NBA draft, rather, Elliott had to decide where his home was going to be before then. So he chose the Wolverines, Tahad obviously coming back to Auburn. So what a duo that could have possibly been for the Tigers. But Cadeau, again, 19 points as they beat Indiana 86-72. Fourth-ranked Purdue picks up their second loss in the season, their first loss in Big Ten play. They fall to the Bruins of UCLA 69-67. UCLA hits a go-ahead three-pointer with 8 seconds to play. Didn't go for the tie, went for the win. And my goodness, UCLA pulls the upset at home over the fourth-ranked Boilermakers. You had Iowa State, after back-to-back losses, absolutely cruise to a win over UCF. They won that game by 30. Oregon, which looked like a really good win for the Auburn Tigers in the NIL Players Era Invitational. Oregon 8-11 and 1-7 in Big Ten play. That hurts. Hurts to have to think about for Oregon, and it hurts for Auburn right now. That's a quad three win for the Auburn Tigers on a neutral floor, which does not help your case too much. You were thinking that was a really big win. Hopefully Oregon can turn it around and you can make it into a quad two or possibly a quad one game. We talked about what could have been the game of the night in college basketball outside of the SEC. 12th-ranked Texas Tech made their way to Waco and used a first half of just domination. They win that one 92-73. Christian Anderson had 26 points, and Texas Tech hit 17 threes on the road in Waco. They outscored the Baylor Bears 55-36 in that first half. They tied in the second half, but my goodness, a 19-point lead. You win it by 19 in that contest. Arkansas, my goodness, gets a bounce-back win over Vanderbilt at home. The 20th-ranked Razorbacks dominated this game basically from start to finish. They won it 93-68 over Vanderbilt, who don't look now is 3-3 in SEC play. They were 16-0, and I believe, and then let me make sure that I'm correct on that. Yes, they were 16-0 in losses to Texas, then Florida, then Arkansas. So they have lost three straight after being 16-0, one of the only undefeated teams in the country at that time. Florida gets a nice win over LSU. That was Jacob's one prediction, that LSU would keep it within 16.5. Sorry, partner, they did not, thanks to a 41-point second half by the Florida Gators. NC State, a team that you just cannot figure out whatsoever. They went at 80-76 over the Clemson Tigers on the road in overtime. And Will Wade's team now 13-6. They're 4-2 in the ACC. You would love for that win to continue to look better and better for the Auburn Tigers. But yeah, a team that could give you 100 points in one night and then could give you about 45 on the other nights, and you could never really pick and choose or give any sort of feel on what that team is going to bring to the floor. But they pick up a really nice road win over the ranked Clemson Tigers, give them their first loss in the ACC. Inside the SEC, Georgia and Missouri. And Georgia Bulldogs, my goodness, you want to talk about a wild, wild game. This was another very similar start in the first half to what you saw with Auburn and Ole Miss. It was 29-26 Georgia at halftime. Not a lot of offense, a whole lot of defense, and not really great shooting. You go look at the final stat sheet even after this contest where they almost scored 50 points apiece in the second half. But Georgia only shot 37% from the floor. Missouri only shot 40%. Both teams shot 28% from the three-point line. Missouri only shot 12 free throws to Georgia's 21, and Georgia out-rebounded the Missouri Tigers. But a wild game as you went down the stretch. Georgia hits a three in the final seconds with Smurf Millender. He had 18 in the contest, had a go-ahead three-pointer. In the final seconds, Missouri could not respond on their final possession of the contest. Georgia now 16-3. They are 4-2 in Southeastern Conference play. We're excited to get Jordan Hill back on the phone lines to talk a little bit more about this Georgia team and what their schedule looks like over the next couple of games and what they could look like. Has their mentality changed at all on just trying to make the tournament into making a little bit of noise in the tournament? I have a feeling his answer would have changed just a little bit. Looking at some of the biggest games here tonight before we take a little bit of an early break, you have Illinois and Maryland. Illinois, the 11th-ranked team in the country, they're 15-3. 6-1 in Big Ten play. They host Maryland. And Mr. Buzz Williams, who hasn't necessarily loved his time so far at Maryland. 8-10, 1-6 in Big Ten play. This game in Champaign and Illinois, almost 20-point favorites in this contest. 10-8, Notre Dame and North Carolina, the 22nd-ranked team in the country. 14-4, but they're only 2-3 in ACC play. And Notre Dame, who is in a conference in college basketball, funny enough, in the ACC, they are 14-point underdogs as they go on the road to Chapel Hill. Top-ranked team in the country, the Arizona Wildcats, one of the few undefeated teams remaining. They are two touchdown favorites over Cincinnati. Tonight you can get that game at 8 o'clock on Fox Sports 1. Excited to see Koa Pete take the floor again. One of my favorite players to watch in college basketball. Really struggled the last time out at UCF. Had two really early fouls. Only played, I think, 3 or 4 minutes in that first half. And was kind of silenced in the second half because Arizona was comfortably out in front of that contest. But excited to see what he can do back at home, back at the McHale Memorial Center. And I know Dara would shout that out as well. Washington heads to Nebraska, who you feel like has been one of the surprises of college basketball so far this season. The team in Lincoln is 18-0 and 7-0 in Big Ten play. Again, they host Washington, the Huskies, at 10-8, 2-5 in Big Ten play. They are 10.5-point favorites at home, are the undefeated Huskers. And the 8 o'clock game that I know everybody is really, really excited to look forward to and look for, again, ESPN Plus. You have 6-14 Pepperdine taking on Gonzaga. Woo. 8th-ranked Gonzaga In conference play, they're 7-0, and they're 19-1 overall, and just, you know, 29-point favorites at home in a conference game on a Wednesday night. It's really poor. And you wonder why they don't make too much noise in the postseason. Man, I mean, you're 30-point favorites in this contest. And even if they don't cover that, they'll win by 20, 25, and go back to work. That game on ESPN Plus at 8 o'clock. If you listen to that game or you watch that game, please find something better to do. I beg you. Two games in the SEC here tonight, Texas and Kentucky. This should be a really interesting game. In Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky 12-6. On the season, they're 3-2 in the SEC, coming off the buzzer beater on the road at LSU. Texas, on the other hand, 11-7, two of the more accomplishing wins in the Southeastern Conference, looking to get back to even. And my goodness, would this be another one inside Rupp Arena? The Cats are 6.5-point favorites in that contest. And Mississippi State and Texas A&M here this evening. Texas A&M hosting the Bulldogs. Mississippi State's 10-8 under Chris Jans, 2-3 in Southeastern Conference play. A&M 14-4 with Bucky Ball. They're 4-1 in SEC play. They're back to Reed Arena in College Station, where they are 9-point favorites in that contest. The one game to watch out for, the one player rather, Josh Hubbard. How many times is he going to shoot the ball tonight? They might need 35, 36 field goals like you've seen him put up a couple of nights ago. And with how fast this A&M team gets up and down the floor, they play at that NBA-type tempo where you shoot every 15, 16 seconds. Love to spray it from behind the arc. We'll see what they can do at home, or can Mississippi State pull off a really nice upset? We'll take our final break here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Come back and wrap it all up. Tell you a little bit of news about what we going on, or what we have going on for the rest of the week. All of that's coming up here as we wrap up the show after this.
This is Amber from Amber and Ian. You're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Wednesday show here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Christian Griffin solo in the studio here this afternoon, but my goodness, with how much content we have going around and along, as well as all of the guests that we got to have here with us on the phone lines here this afternoon, makes the show very easy. We appreciate everybody for listening, and for all of our guests for taking the time out of their busy days to join us and give their news, whether that's individual, whether that is Auburn, here with everybody, with all of our listeners, and with us here on ESPN 106.7. And hour number one, again, we got to talk about Auburn and Ole Miss, Auburn's 12-point win on the road, and how, although it didn't necessarily look great from behind the three-point line, how it could be one of the best wins that Auburn has in the season. Now back-to-back wins in Southeastern Conference play. You're now 3-3 in the Southeastern Conference, right in the heart of things, and you now get a little bit of a longer break before you head to Gainesville to take on one of the top teams in the country, if not the top team in the SEC, in the Florida Gators, who you feel like has figured things out a little bit with Mr. Golden at the helm. We also got to talk a little bit about the Charles Bediako summary and the abysmal situation that's going on for the NCAA. Again, not even necessarily when you're comparing the Auburn versus Alabama emotional side of things, but just what this looks like for college basketball, what this looks like for the future of amateur sports. What is the term amateurism? Is that going to go by the wayside? You feel like we're already at the point of calling these teams semi-professional teams, and so if Bediako suits up and plays against Tennessee on Saturday, it's going to be the biggest test that the NCAA has arguably ever had to deal with, because this is not just college kids. This is not just something that happens in one of the university programs. This is someone who declared for the NBA draft early, went undrafted, signed contracts, played in the G League after playing college basketball, and is now suing you to come back and play college basketball, and then being denied and then a judge in Tuscaloosa signing a restraining order for you to be able to suit up and play. And so that hearing, again, is the 27th, but that is not before Alabama's game on Saturday against Tennessee. And so we will have to sit and wait, almost put a pin in a little bit of that conversation. We'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow on just the generics of what it could mean for college basketball. But we'll talk a little bit more when we come back on Monday for what that conversation and just what the drama holds with all of the specifics once that hearing goes and once the game is played and what that could look like for not only Alabama but just everybody in college basketball. Because if it's just a free reign, my goodness, what are you going to see in college basketball? We talked about that in hour number one. We also got Davis Thompson, a former Lee Scott Warrior and a former Georgia Bulldog with us on the phone lines. I know I got to talk with a bunch of guys at Lee Scott that were really excited for the conversation. Now a PGA Tour pro and a PGA Tour winner as he prepares for his round one Thursday, his first tournament over in Palm Springs in California. Again, that's an 11:13 tee time if you want to be able to keep up with him. We appreciate him and his time for being able to squeeze us into a busy schedule, a busy practice round. I know he's out on the course right now hitting a couple practice shots before he does his final tune-ups for his tee time tomorrow. We also got Daryl Dapprich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn to start our number two. We got his thoughts on Auburn basketball, his thoughts in there on what Auburn needs to do at Florida, a little thought on the football field in there as well, and what Tyler Hudnick and Alex Golish are doing with the offensive line. We talked about some games in the top 25 and in the SEC. And, again, a really good show here for you on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Tomorrow's show is going to look relatively similar, a very guest-heavy schedule. We have Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. We have Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, our usual Thursday afternoon guests. We also get to sit down with Auburn Gymnastics being at home this Friday. It means we get to continue our conversation with the head man, the head coach of the Tigers, Jeff Graba, as they welcome in the number one team in the country on Friday evening. So everybody, if you haven't heard about it, plan on being at Neville Arena at 7:45 at the very latest, if not 6:15 when doors open. Auburn and Florida, the number one team in the country, comes to town. Also, Auburn women's basketball tomorrow takes on fifth-ranked Vanderbilt following the show. So we're back tomorrow, 2 to 4. The drive will be from 4 to 6, and Auburn women's basketball at 6:30 tomorrow. But until then, we will talk to you later. Hopefully Jacob Goins back here in the studio with us. But until then, for Jacob Goins, I'm Christian Griffin. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.